they are new in it. They would not have a great many preconceived ideas in approaching it.
Now, one of our big problems there, Dick, the biggest between us, and I don't want to disrupt anybody, is Lodge.
I know it.
He ain't worth a damn. He can't work with anybody.
Right,
he won't let anybody
out there.
He won't let anybody else work. We get the best USIA man to put on all the radios and try to get him to be loyal to the government and to be fired and quit
deserted.
And he just he called in the USIA and said, I handle the newspapers, magazines, and radio myself, so the hell with you. So that knocks that guy out. Then we send out the best CIA man we got, and he said, I handle intelligence, the hell with you. Then he wants a new deputy chief of mission. We get him to give us some names, and we pick one of those, the best one we got, send him out to run the damn war, and he gets where he won't speak to the deputy chief of mission. And we got General Harkins out there, and we thought he was a pretty good man. He gets where he can't work with him, so we send Westmoreland out. That's just a hell of a mess. And you can't do anything with Lodge, and that's where McNamara is so frustrated. He goes out, and they get agreements, and he issues orders, and he sends stuff in there, and then Lodge takes charge of it himself, and he's not a take-charge man, and he just gets stacked up.
He never has followed anything through to a conclusion since I've known him, and I've known him for 20-odd years. He never has. I went out with him around the world in 43. The only committee went out during the war. We went everywhere, and Lodge is on there. He's a bright fella, intelligent fella, but he's just not a man that persists. And he thinks he's dealing with barbarian tribes out there, that he's the emperor, and he's going to tell them what to do. It ain't about in my mind what he had old Dean killed out there himself.
That was a tragic mistake. We've lost everything.
We want to get somebody with more front to Lodge to do exactly what he said right quick. And he's living up on cloud nine. It's a bad mistake. I don't know. I think probably the best thing you could do would be to ask Lodge if he don't think he's about time he's coming home.
Well, he'd be back home campaigning against us on this issue every day.
God almighty, he's going to come back anyhow when time comes. I'd give him a reason to do it. He's going to come back. You bring him back now, everybody say, well, hell, he's back. George Johnson removed him out there. MacArthur couldn't, he with all of his power, couldn't hurt Truman because everybody would say, well, hell, he just MacArthur, he got removed. And so millions sympathized with him, innit? And you need to worry, Lodge will be in here. In my judgment, he'll be on that ticket in some way. I don't think they'll nominate him for president, but they may put him on there for vice president. Whether they do or don't, he'll be back here campaigning for that campaign over. I don't know. I'd best take that back. This thing is so hopeless for the Republicans out of that. He certainly got enough political sense to know that and not get his head chopped off. And that's the foolish shit.
Has Clay got any judgment on a thing like this? Is it?
Yes, he has. Yeah, he has, but though he's inclined to
see the other area of the world almost, isn't
he? I think Clay has, he knows, I'd take his judgment on almost anything if he'd separate himself from his predilections, and he don't have any out in that part of the world. He's a, and I think people generally have got a good deal of respect for Clay's judgments, too. And there's a great deal of affection and respect for old man Bradley. He's not in his dory jet by a hell of a lot. I got him up here the other day getting some advice from him on some matters, and I found him very alert. He's so humble, I don't know. He just be a doormat for Lodge out there. But he's an intelligent man. Now, Clay wouldn't. Clay will stand up to anybody if he feels like he's got any support from the higher places. I just don't know. It's a tragic situation. It's just one of those places where you can't win. Anything you do is wrong.
Well, think about it. Tell me.
All right, so
I
thought about it. I have worried about it. I have afraid about it.
I don't believe we can do anything.
Religiously, I have, because it's something that frightens me, because it's my country's involved over there. And if we get into there on any considerable scale, there's no doubt in my mind but the Chinese will be in there. And there we'd be fighting a dang conventional war against our secondary, potential threat. And it'd be a career on a much bigger scale, and then a worse scale, because its peculiar physical configuration of Korea made extensive for guerrilla fighting impossible. But that's not true over in there. If you go from Laos and Cambodia and Vietnam and bring North Vietnam into it too, it's the saddest mess on earth. They lost 250,000 men and spent a couple billion of their money and 2 billion of ours down there. And just got the hell whipped out of them, and they had the best troops they had, including practically a division of crack German troopers who were starving and enlisted in the Foreign Legion went down there.
You don't have any doubt, but what if we go in there and get them up against the wall, the Chinese communists going to come in?
There's no doubt about
that. That's my judgment, and my people don't think so.
There's no doubt in my mind about it. They say you'll find Chinese volunteers in there as soon as you get very shortly after we have active combat units engaged.
Now, Mike writes me a memo, and all he says is that we continue support to Vietnamese, and that's number one. And then to the reflex of peak and face saving at every essay of De Gaulle's, well, we're not peak. We just asked De Gaulle to give us a blueprint, and he don't have it. He just says neutralization, but then nobody wants to agree to neutralization. And we're asking who will agree, though they've been mild, we're ready, but he just says, well, we have to continue to maintain our strength and get in a position. But he's got no blueprint. Three, a realistic facing the fact that we're in this situation without reliable military allies. Well, I know that. Four, an exploration of the possibility of the United Nations or some other arrangement. Well, this is Mike Nelson. And there will be a damn thing, even on the Cambodian border. We can't get a majority vote in the Security Council. A willingness to entertain any reasonable proposals for international conferences. Well, we are ready to confer with anybody in time, but those conferences ain't going to do a damn bit of good. They ain't going to take back and give us territory and behave. We tell them every week, we tell Khrushchev, we send Sena and Hanoi and all of them word that we'll get out of there and stay out of there until they just quit raiding their neighbors and they just say, screw you.
That's right.
So the conference won't do it. Now, the whole question, as I see it, is it more dangerous for us to let things go as they're going now, deteriorating every day?
I don't think we can let it go, Mr. President, indefinitely.
Then it would be for us to move in.
We either get to move in or move out.
That's about what it is.
Our future. You can make a tremendous case for moving out.
Take the next
good one for moving in, but
Nixon, Rockefeller,
could be more consistent with the attitude of American people and their general reactions to go in. They could understand that, but getting out, even after we go in and get bogged down in there with the war with China, it's going to be a hell of a mess. It'd be worse than we are now. To some extent, that's what makes it so difficult. And don't forget that old Ben Milam, the only man, got killed. And he said, who's good with old Ben? He's a great hero, but he got killed.
That's right.
And the old man was you. And they start off with Ben Milam, which they ain't going to do to any sad degree. They'll get out and Ben be killed. It's just a hell of a come on. I don't know. I don't know how much Russia. They won't cause us all the trouble again, but if there's any truth in the theory that they are really at odds with China. And really is a treaty there.
They are, but they'd go with them as soon as Spice started. They wouldn't forsake that China had communist
power. I wasn't talking about Spidey in that, but what we might get them to take an active part in getting those in getting the thing straightened out. However,
we're doing all we can on that, but she doesn't show any signs of contributing.
Yeah, it may be foolish too, and for one extent, because we just continue to pull money in there and get nothing back out of it. We don't even get goodwill back out of that. And I just don't know. It's a And I don't know where to go for advice. I just don't know where to go for it. McNamara is the smartest fellow any of us know. But he's got so damn, he is opinionated as hell, and he's made up his mind on this. I don't think it any amount of credit.
Well, I'll tell you what he's done, Dick. I think he's a pretty flexible fella. He's gone out there, and he's got Conn to agree that we cannot launch a counteroffensive or hit in the north until he gets more stabilized and better set in the south. And he thought he was buying his time and we could get by till November. But these politicians got to raise hell, and Spitz Howard writing these stories. All the senators, Nixon and Rockefeller and Goldwater all saying, let's move, let's go in the north.
That was a devastating piece that Lucas had on
yeah.
his page, just a little old paper.
That's right.
I don't cover much of the country, but if that got out everywhere, it'd raise a lot of hell.
That's right. And they can always get an isolated example of bad things. McNamara says that that's not generally true, that they have too many damn people being killed every day. And they're flying the sorties, and they're getting some results, and they're killing thousands of other people, but we're losing more. I mean, we're losing ground. And he was hoping that we could avoid moving into the north and thereby provoking the Chinese.
Well, there ain't any way
for a few months.
No, you know what did I do? We tried that. From infiltration, guerrilla war standpoint, with disastrous results.
Lodge, Nixon, Rockefeller, Goldwater, all say move. They pick out an oil plant or a refinery or something like that. Take selected targets, watch this crew, they're coming down, try to bomb them out of them when they're coming in.
Yeah. Anyway, you can't, that's just impossible.
McNamara said yesterday that they're in Korea, that the LeMay and all of them was going to stop all those tanks, and at night he came through and they turned all the Air Force loose on and they got one. 89 come on through.
We tried it in Korea. We even sent and got out a lot of old B-29s to increase the bomb load and sent over there and just dropped millions and millions of pounds of bombs day and night. And in the morning, we knock out the road at night, and in the morning, the damn people be back traveling over. That's true on that railroad over there. On the North Coast, we have used the Navy and these 14-inch rifles and knocked the whole mountain down on it, shelled it, and knocked all these whole mountain down and covered up the railroad tracks. Everybody said, oh, Dad, we've got them now, and the next morning, their trains are running after double right over that track, and we shot up $7 million worth of shells to think if we closed it. We didn't do, we never could actually interdict all our lines of communications in Korea, though we had absolute control of the seas and the air, and we never did stop it. And we won't stop these people either.
Well, an impeached president, though, would run out, wouldn't it? I just don't believe outside of Morris, everybody I talk to says you got to go in, including Hickenlooper, including all the Republicans. None of them disagreed with him yesterday when he made the statement that we had to stand. And I don't know how in the hell you're going to get out unless they tell you to get out.
If I had a man running the government over that door, get out, fix you up.
Oh, yeah, that's right, but you can't do that.
And I don't know if we get somebody, if I can't remember that fellow's name, or some sort of a maverick fella that's got a big following down in that below Saigon, and our people all hate him because he's always against the government. And, he's not fighting them and all, but he's a very powerful man in Vietnam. And now everybody takes over the government, gives him his excuse for their repressions and suppressions. And if he were to get it and say, now you damn Yankees, get out of here, I'm running this government now.
Wouldn't that pretty well fix us in the eyes of the world, though? Wouldn't it make it look mighty bad?
Well, I don't know. We look good right now. And course, you look pretty good, I guess, going in there with all the troops and sending them all in there. But I'll tell you, it'll be the most expensive venture this country ever went into.
I'd rather let a little sergeant over to work for me over at the house. And he got six children. And I just put him up as a United States Army and Air Force and Navy every time I think about making this decision and think about sending that father with those six kids in there. And what the hell are we going to get out of his doing it? And it just makes the chills on up my back.
It does me. I just can't see it.
I haven't got nerve to do it, and I don't see any other way out of it.
Much sense to it.
That's one of these things right here, though, you lose. Well, think about it, and I'll talk to you again. I hate to bother you, but
I'll just... I can help you. God knows I do, because it's a terrific quandary that we're in over there. We just getting the quicksands up to our very neck, and I just don't know what the hell the best way to do about it.
I love you, and I'll be calling you.
I'll see you, sir.
Monday, November 4th, 1963. Over the weekend, the coup in Saigon took place. It culminated 3 months of conversation about a coup, karma, conversation which divided the government here and in Saigon. Opposed to a coup was General Taylor. Attorney General, Secretary McNamara, to a somewhat less degree, John McCone, partly because of all the hostility to Lodge that causes him to lack confidence in Lodge's judgment, some of Lodge's, as a result of a new hostility, as Lodge shifted his station chief. So in favor of the coup was state, led by Abel Harriman, George Ball, Roger Tilsman, supported by Mike Foster of the White House. I feel that we must bear a good deal of responsibility for it, beginning with our table of early August, which we suggested the coup. The period, in my judgment, that wire was badly drafted. Comrades should never have been sent on a Saturday. I should not have given my consent to it without a roundtable conference in which McNamara and Taylor could have presented their views. While we did redress that balance in later wires, that first wire encouraged Lodge along the course to which he was. In any case, inclined. We know together a clergy for
attempt to do any aggressive acts and so on, then all bets are off. In addition, my guess is that by the end of next month, we're going to be toe-to-toe in Berlin anyway. So that I think this is important for the time being, because it requires quite a step down for Khrushchev. On the other hand, I think that, as we all know, they just probe, and where it's unreliable, so we just have to stay busy on it.
As I've heard more of the things about it, these people do not quit. I'm just going to take too quick. Certainly, I'm with tumor or anything else.
Right.
They take any spot in the world. They don't care where it is.
That's right.
And it's just the question is, are you in such a place you either can't or won't resist?
That's right.
Now, yeah. Well, we've got this at Tibet. Plenty of good Tibet.
Yeah.
Up that mountain, Kafir, and we couldn't reach it.
Right.
And so, what to do then is to purge yourself.
Right.
Now, so they get you and they probe when you can't do anything. Then if they get another place where they think that you just won't for some reason or other,
yeah. Why,
then they go ahead.
That's right.
I think you're doing exactly right.
Right.
Go ahead, but just let them know that you won't be the exception. But if the other proceeds, then you've always got the right to determine where the other guy is the exception.
Well, we'll stay right out, and I'll keep in touch with you, General.
Thank you very much, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
The effects are rather incredible.
They are incredible. We got the message on Friday night, which was rather forthcoming from them, and then on Saturday we got the one on Turkey, and this morning we got the one going back to their more reasonable position. So we're going to stay right on it and see if we can work up satisfactory verification procedures, but I just wanted to bring you up to date on it. We got a lot of problems still to go, but I think we've made some progress. Well, I think we just have to the rhythm of these things. We'll see what happens this week. But I just wanted you to know I keep in touch with you and keep you up to date. Thank you, Mr. President. Bye-bye.
But the fact remains that politics has become one of our most abused and neglected professions. It ranks low on the occupational list of a large share of the American politicians. Yet it is this profession, it is these politicians who make the great decisions of war and peace, prosperity and recession, the decision whether we look to the future or the past. Like most things in life, or like many decisions in life, a combination of factors pressed on me, which directed me into my present profession, period. I think all of us must be willing give ourselves to this, some of ourselves to this most exacting, to the most exacting discipline of self-government. The magic of politics is not the panoply of office. The magic of politics is participating on all levels of national life in an affirmative way of determining, of playing a small role in determining whether freedom will not only endure, whether, in Mr. Faulkner's words, freedom will not only endure, but also prevail.
What I call you about is this damn school construction.
Yeah.
You know, for these schools down and these bases.
Yeah.
Do you want the schools to be put up?
Well, I haven't really given this matter any thought at all.
Well, they understood over at HEW. You know, Willikoff announced it last March,
yeah.
And as I understood it, you weren't exactly happy about that.
Well, I didn't know what, that's right.
And then they, it's quite ridiculous, actually, but then they announced back in January, because they understood from Ted Sines you wanted to announce, but they were going to put two more schools out, and they've announced six. But, for instance, Fort McClellan, they're going to erect a school for, well, no, here's one, Fort Rucker. Grades 1 to 6, 892 on-base children, a total of 14 Negro children, and the estimated cost is $742,000.
Just because of the 14?
Yeah. Fort Stewart's 23 children, it's $297,000.
Yeah.
Robins Air Force Base is 8 Negro children, $594,000. Fort Jackson, 18 children, $234,000.
Fort Jackson, way over here, Fort Jackson.
Fort Jackson, South Carolina. Myrtle Beach.
What is your suggestion?
Well, and then they're going to put two more. So it's going to cost about $3 million. We've got a court case, you see, at the present time.
Yeah.
Which probably won't be resolved for another year or a year and a half, maybe 2 years before it perhaps goes to the Supreme Court, which will resolve all of these matters. What they will do by spending for these eight places, they'll spend about $3 million, and they'll get